And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Dave Malarkey with you on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Day after Election Day. Busy day yesterday, and of course, late last night, we had election returns for you here on WISR. Any major surprises in the election yesterday? I don't think so, no. Voter turnout here in Butler County was around 31%. Higher than a lot of people thought, but still, you know, that's less than one-third of the registered voters in Butler County going to the polls yesterday. And that's just the registered voters. Obviously, the population of Butler County is higher. There are some people who, for whatever reason, choose not to register to vote. But even of those registered, less than a third, a little less than a third, went to the polls yesterday. So, not unexpected in an odd year election. You know, maybe not the splash that you get in a gubernatorial election, or certainly not the splash that you get in a presidential election. We'll have that next year. But nonetheless, a lot of local races, and you know, a lot of people say, well, what's my one vote? What difference is my one vote going to make? Maybe in a presidential election, you could argue that point, but in the local elections, municipal elections, which we had yesterday for township supervisor, township commissioner, school board seats, and county races for judge and for prothonotary, you know, a vote here and there can make a big difference. Maybe the weather hampered some people because the first half of the day yesterday was pretty miserable, no doubt about that. It was wet and raining and chilly, but by afternoon, I voted in the mid-afternoon after work yesterday, and, you know, we had a few clouds, but we had a good bit of blue sky, and everything had dried off by then. So, you know, it wasn't like it was snowing all day long on Election Day. The weather may have hampered those who wanted to vote early in the morning, no question about it. But Election Day has come and gone. We had the new election system here in Butler County, the new way to vote, or some might say the old way to vote back in the days. Can you remember when we used to use pencil and paper to vote? I'd have to think back. I mean, obviously we've had the electronic touch screen for several years. Prior to that, we had the punch card system. Remember that, where we had the little pin that you used to punch holes in a card, and then that was scanned, and we had the hanging chad and the pregnant chad and all that, and that went out the window, and we went to the touchscreen. What did we have before the punch card thing? Was that the big, heavy steel voting machines? I can't remember for sure. They were really cumbersome monstrosities. But anyway, the new system, you fill in the oval. You know, you fill in the blank oval, kind of like taking an SAT test when you were in school, or filling out a lottery ticket. That's probably a better analogy. You know, if you're buying a lotto ticket or a Mega Millions or, you know, one of those things, kind of what the new system is like. Seemed to go pretty smoothly, I think. Haven't talked with Sherry Brewer yet, the director of the Bureau of Elections. I imagine she's napping today. It would have been an incredibly long day for the folks in the Bureau of Elections, watching very closely how the new system was working. Seemed to work pretty well. Well, that puts another election day into the books. And do I have to remind you that the next one will be the presidential primary? Yes. next year is a presidential election year. And, of course, you know, campaigning's already begun. The Democrats, who at one point had 24 candidates, they've already had, three or four debates already. Well, we'll see. The first primary is coming up, the Iowa caucuses and the New Hampshire primary, fairly early in the new year. And then the race will really be on. Coming up, we're going to be talking with Stephen Waldman about sacred liberty on the first segment of the program today. So we'll take a break, and we'll be back and chat with Steve in just a moment. Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler, one of our sponsors on It's Your Turn. What a great job they do. And, you know, as we approach the holiday season, you realize how close we are. This coming Monday is Veterans Day, just a few weeks down the road, Thanksgiving. Think about putting the Society of St. Vincent de Paul on your holiday gift list. You know, whether it's donating items to the thrift store and the Greater Butler Mart, or maybe even a monetary gift. You know, put it in their stocking to help them help the less fortunate. They do such great work with their food bank and their client aid program, and of course the thrift store, generating money to fund the food bank and the client aid program. So think about it. Yeah, if you make it on your gift list over the next few weeks, put the Society of St. Vincent de Paul on it. They like to say we stand tallest when we stoop to help others. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Coming up on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. We're going to be chatting with Stephen Waldman, author of a new book entitled Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Stephen Waldman, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here on the program today, sir.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Well, when we talk about religious liberty, I think most Americans kind of figure that, we've had that forever. Was, in fact, America always religious, always have religious freedom, Steve?
Well, no. That's one of the conclusions of this book, and somewhat surprisingly for me. Really, we haven't had robust religious freedom for most of our history. We are, in fact, you know, taught that the land was settled by people seeking religious freedom, but they really weren't seeking religious freedom. They were seeking protection for themselves, and the difference is religious freedom is something that you are willing to apply to other people too. So you have the Puritans who were harassed in England and then come over and start hanging Quakers from trees in Boston Common for the crime of being a Quaker. So, and that was really the history for the first 150 years. Not always that brutal, but it was basically a situation where the colonies were adopting the European model of picking a religion to have the state favor that religion, you know, taxing its citizens to help pay for the salaries of the ministers of one religion. And it took a long time and a lot of really kind of sometimes bloody struggle to get to what we have now, which is, in fact, quite a robust model of religious freedom.
It is kind of ironic because we all learned in our history classes way back, even in elementary school, about the Pilgrims and the Puritans and the Separatists who came to America seeking religious freedom. But for the most part, it was just for their particular brand of religion, right?
Yeah, exactly. And it was very hard for people to get, you know, kind of accept the idea that if you found you know, what you believe is the true faith, that you should be tolerant of other faiths that are wrong. You know, it's it almost felt like, I think, to people like they were abandoning God or betraying their faith to not do it. So it was, we take it for granted now, but the ideas that, you know, James Madison and others started to really push around the time of the Constitution were pretty revolutionary, you know, and Madison's in particular, like, the key to his philosophy was that the best way to encourage religion is to leave it alone. And we kind of have absorbed that and take it for granted, but it was very radical at the time. You know, you usually, at that point, people thought, you want to help religion? The government should get in there and help religion, and, you know, using its taxing power and preferences. So that was a big shift, not just in America, but really in world history. It just hadn't happened much. And now, that wasn't the end of the story either, because the First Amendment only applied to the federal government, not to the states. So there was still plenty of kind of persecution and regulation on the state and local level for a long time, and it resulted in real serious harassment and persecution of Catholics and Mormons and Jehovah's Witnesses and other groups throughout American history.
Was it because, we're talking with Stephen Waldman, author of Sacred Liberty, was it because, for example, in the New England colonies, Massachusetts and so on, that the Puritans and the Pilgrims were so discriminatory other than their own religion? Is that why we had colonies like, well, Pennsylvania, for example, where I am right now, William Penn, you know, that was a Quaker colony. Maryland was very much a Catholic colony. Is that why that happened, Steve?
Yeah, and one advantage that America had over Europe is land. You know, we had extra land, so in some cases when people were persecuted, they could go off somewhere else and start a new approach. And Pennsylvania was really very important in the whole story, because what I was saying before you know, the first 150 years were mostly failed experiments in religious regulation. One important exception was Pennsylvania and Philadelphia. You know, James Madison had real Philadelphia envy. He thought that they had it worked out. They had religious freedom and pluralism, and he also connected it. He thought, you know, they also seemed to have a lot of economic vitality and businesses and libraries, culture, and he thought it was all connected. Even Pennsylvania, though, kind of gave a little cautionary tale of how hard it is to get it right when you have a kind of religiously based government. During the period when the Quakers were really in control of the legislature, and this is obviously a group that had been persecuted themselves and were very sensitive to religious freedom, but they also had religious views, specifically pacifism, that were getting in the way of governing. And they it kind of came to a head when there was a massacre in the western part of the state, and the people brought they were massacred by Indians, and they brought the charred dead bodies of the children and family members who were killed up to the state house in Philadelphia, and basically forced the Quakers to drop you know, their pacifist policy on the Western Front. So it was kind of a little cautionary tale that even if you're well-intended and sensitive to religious minorities, having a kind of a one religion run a state is problematic.
I'm interested in your discussion in your book, Stephen, of James Madison. I'm trying to remember my sequence of presidents here. Washington, John Adams, Jefferson, and then Madison was the fourth president, right? Am I remembering that correctly?
Yes, that's right. Though I was at a Disney World exhibit once the other day with my kids, and they had these paintings up on the wall of the early presidents, and they had Washington, Adams, Jefferson, and then James Monroe. And it's like, wait a second, there's something missing in here. They skipped James Madison, who happened to have, you know, written the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Like, what's a guy got to do to get some respect at Disney World? But he was, in the story of religious freedom, he really was the most important of the founding fathers, more so even than Thomas Jefferson, because he really was the one who forged a coalition around religious freedom that pulled together people like Jefferson, who were these sort of Enlightenment people who were actually pretty anti-religion, and evangelical Christians, or Baptists, but what we now call evangelical Christians, who wanted religious freedom for different reasons. And Madison pulled them all together in this approach that, you know, that pulled the government out of regulating or even helping religion. That was the other thing. It's like, it wasn't just a matter of, hey, we shouldn't persecute people. Madison believed that the state shouldn't help religions either. There was this, you know, he was really very influenced by what was happening in his own backyard. He was in Virginia, and as a young man, there was this wave of persecution against Baptists. Just horrifying stuff. I mean, and just right on the eve of the American Revolution, about half the Baptist ministers had been arrested. And they would, you know, a preacher would be up preaching, and someone would come in, just take the butt end of a whip and shove it in his mouth, drag him out to the outside and beat him up, or throw hornet's nests into the services. It was really brutal. And so Madison didn't have to learn about religious persecution, you know, reading books about Europe. He was hearing about it and seeing it in his own backyard. And it led him to this approach that was very opposed to the government, you know, favoring one religion or another. That was the first part of it. But he also, as I said, didn't like the ideas of the government helping religion either. And this was very much influenced by the Baptists. They thought it would backfire, that it would make religions lazy and corrupt, and make regular people think that it's, you know, a religion is sort of a trick of the state. So he had a kind of free market attitude that the religions should be on their own and that they will be better for it.
I don't know how old James Madison was when he was elected president. He was the fourth president. Was he old enough to have been involved in the writing of the Constitution some decades earlier, or no?
Yes, he was a key figure in the writing of the Constitution and in the writing of the Bill of Rights. First Amendment, which is so important for the you know, the story of religious freedom. So he was really kind of, I don't know if you remember that movie Zelig, where the character sort of, I'm dating myself, I suppose, was sort of present throughout history. Madison finds himself in a lot of these key areas about religious freedom, including the writing of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
We're chatting with Stephen Waldman, author of a new book entitled The Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Stephen argues that there have been other presidents down through the years who have been staunch pushers for religious freedom. We'll talk about that when we come back in just a moment. A quick break. More on It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these words.
They're back! So don't miss another night of raucous musical comedy when Connecting to Tomorrow hosts the Piano Maniacs for an encore performance. Saturday, November 16th at the Lindora American Legion. Tickets $20 each and the proceeds benefit C2T's teen mentoring programs. Doors open at 6, music starts at 7. It's BYOB, must be 21, food is available. Get tickets at the door, Butler County Radio Network, or Eventbrite online. And join C2T for some dueling piano fun.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot has delicious, all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens to make your Thanksgiving meal special this year. Their birds are handled with extreme care and are preservative and additive-free. Buy your turkey frozen today or get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. For the tastiest turkeys and chickens in Western PA, call the Jones Turkey Farm, 724-352-2450, or visit jonesturkeyfarm.com. The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, quite simply the best.
And now, frozen sweet corn available too.
Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. We're chatting by telephone today on this segment of It's Your Turn with Stephen Waldman, author of Sacred Liberty, America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. A little bit about our guest. Stephen Waldman is a journalist and entrepreneur. He was co-founder of BeliefNet, an award-winning multi-faith website. He earlier was a national editor of U.S. News and World Report and a national correspondent for Newsweek. Madison, not the only president who pushed for religious freedom. You talk about others in your book, Stephen. Who were some of those?
Well, George Washington was actually important in a different way. Not so much as president, but when he was the head of the Continental Army, which, when you think about it, was sort of the first national institution we had. We had 13 separate little countries. Well, he created this national institution, the Army, and started to confront the diversity of Americans' religions. So, as you said, he had Catholics from Maryland and Quakers from Pennsylvania and things like that. And one of the first things he was appalled at was that the soldiers had a practice of burning effigies of the Pope on Guy Fawkes Day, you know, in a very, very anti-Catholic move. And Washington, meanwhile, was trying to recruit the help of France, a Catholic country. And so he said, this is appalling and stupid. We're not going to be able to win over Catholic countries. So he banned the practice of burning effigies of the Pope and, in general, tried to stamp out anti-Catholic sentiment in the Continental Army. And by the way, this is a real theme in the book, is that for the first few hundred years, anti-Catholic sentiment and persecution was really important and significant, of riots and burning down convents and churches. And, you know, when the big wave of Catholic immigration came in the 1830s and 40s, it led to a big backlash against Catholics. Other presidents, the World War II presidents, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, it was a real turning point because that was sort of the moment when we as a country started to think of religious freedom as an important ideal of America that unites us. So not just religion. You know, presidents had always invoked God and God's favor in speeches and things like that. This is a little different. This is saying this approach that we have to religious freedom, where we give all different religions equality and freedom, is what separates us from Hitler and the fascists and then later the communists. So it became this moment where they elevated religious freedom to being this really sacred, very, very important part of the national character. And then one other I would mention that may come as a surprise is George W. Bush. In his posture on Islam in the days and years right after 9/11 was really important and well done. And he had a difficult task because he had to both attack Islamic terrorism, very real threat, while defending American Muslims. And drawing that line very clearly and saying, you know, these are two different things. We need to support and defend our Muslim neighbors while attacking Islamic radicals. And that really came at a very important time. Things could have gotten very, very ugly if he hadn't done that.
Didn't Barack Obama also speak strongly in defense of Islam?
Yes, he did. And I think, you know, by this time, I think there was the two of them coming back to back had a real consensus around drawing that line and making sure that we're not demonizing American Muslims while we're attacking Muslim terrorists.
What about today? Here in western Pennsylvania, we had a horrific accident last year where many people were murdered in a synagogue in Pittsburgh. I'm sure you're familiar with that, Steve.
Yes, and it's, you know, it was a real reminder. The fact that the worst, you know, massacre of Jews in American history didn't happen in, you know, 1818 or 1918, but in 2018, was really alarming and a wake-up call that, you know, when you're talking about religious freedom and tolerance, we're much better than we used to be, but it can unravel pretty quickly. And the one thing that was encouraging about the aftermath of that event is that everyone really rallied around the Jewish community and of all, you know, including Muslim, you know, mosques and churches. That, I think, distinguished it a little bit from what might have happened 100 years earlier. That was the positive part of what happened there, but it's a reminder that in the modern age with social media and sort of easy access to guns, that even a small number of people who are, you know, full of hatred for religion can do so much harm.
Are there people other than presidents of the United States, I'm talking about regular, normal, everyday Americans, who have also pushed the cause of religious freedom throughout our history, Stephen Waldman?
Yes, and in some ways I would say they were even more important, because they're just incredible courage. Like, there's a woman named Mary Dyer who I sort of feel like every school child should learn about. She was a Quaker in Massachusetts in the Puritan era, and at the time being a Quaker was a crime. She knew that, and they said, if you keep coming back here, we're going to execute you. And yet two of her friends were executed, and she kept returning anyway because she thought the law was so obscene, and she used a form of civil disobedience. She came back, and they did, in fact, arrest her and take her to Boston Commons, and they hung her from a tree and killed her. She knew what she was doing, but she wanted to challenge the law, and she believed that, you know, her freedom and that the path she had chosen was the right one. There were children throughout the story that kind of blow me away. Like, there were a lot of Catholic school children there was a period in the 19th century when there was a big fight over what Bible would be read in the public schools. So basically, Protestant Bible, meaning the King James translation, was taught in the public schools, and the Catholics started to object to this. That we have a different translation that we prefer, and also a different Ten Commandments than the Protestants used. And the Protestants insisted, no, the King James Bible is the Bible. That's the one we're going to be using. And there were riots, and there were, in Philadelphia was one of the biggest ones. There were 30 people died in a riot there over the teaching of the Bible in the public schools. And then you had these school children, like in Boston, who were told to read the Protestant Bible. They refused, and they were punished and expelled, but then they kept coming back and doing it over again. So it was things like that that really advanced the cause forward, And there's a lot of brutal persecution, but it often led to progress afterwards. So it was quite a slow process, really, and needed tremendous bravery on the part of Americans. And ultimately, a little bit of a kind of all-for-one, one-for-all attitude among different religious minorities that, like, you can't just fight for your own. You have to fight for the principle that everyone should have religious freedom. It was only really once people started to embrace that idea that we really had legitimate, strong religious freedom.
Our time begins to run short. One final question, though, Stephen Waldman. Some people believe that religious freedom is under threat in the United States today. Is that true? And if so, how so?
I think there are some really worrisome signs, and the number one thing is the attack on American Muslims, which in the last 5 or 10 years has kind of crossed the line from being about Islamic terrorism to a broad brush attack on Muslims, communities trying to block the construction of mosques. There was a poll that said only half of Republicans were willing to say that Islam should be legal in America. So that gives you a sign of how much the consensus has unraveled. So that could be really dangerous. And there's also a little bit of a tendency now to kind of politicize religious freedom, just to use it as a club against your opponents. To generate votes or TV ratings or things like that. And that is unfortunate because it kind of diminishes it. It makes it smaller and less serious.
Many other topics discussed in Stephen Waldman's book, for example, how the phrase under God got inserted into the Pledge of Allegiance. Mm-hmm. Lots of other stuff, too. The title of the book is Sacred Liberty: America's Long, Bloody, and Ongoing Struggle for Religious Freedom. Stephen Waldman, our guest, the author of that book. Stephen, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today, sir.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Sure. So long now.
Bye.
Undoubtedly, the most influential band of all time was the Beatles, with 20 number one hits. Experience one of the top-rated Beatles tribute bands, A Hard Day's Night, at Tanglewood Center on Saturday, November 16th. Doors open at 6 o'clock. Dinner buffet by Chef George at 7, showtime at 8. Only $35. As always, it's BYOB. There's no doubt why this group was invited to Liverpool, England, to perform during International Beatles Week. For tickets, call Tanglewood at 287-0021.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Welcome back, good friends. It's the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Nice to have you with us today. And on the next segment of the program, we're going to talk about the Next Tier Bank Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month. Carol Oczynski, Senior Vice President at Next Tier, is with us here today. Carol, it's always good to see you.
It's always good to see you too, Dave. Thanks for having me.
And which nonprofit has next year selected to spotlight in this month of November?
Well, actually one of the best, in my opinion, but it is Life Steps. They've been a partner, and I think we've partnered with them as the spotlight nonprofit. This might be the fourth year that we've done so, and we're excited to spotlight them throughout our branch network and allow them to come here and share some news about some of their missions, their needs, and what's going on at Life Steps.
Well, we're pleased to be able to chat with the Vice President of Development for Life Steps, Cassandra Kokoski. Cassandra, it's good to see you again. Nice to have you back with us.
Thank you. It's good to see you, too.
So what's new with Life Steps these days?
Well, we just finished our Pancake Festival, which was yesterday, and next year is actually one of our event sponsors for that event, also celebrating the 60th year. So what's amazing about this event is not only it's a Butler tradition, but the funds raised go to benefit the programs and services that Life Steps provides.
Mm-hmm.
Some of those programs and services are programs such as our free child check, developmental and autism screening. So each year we screen thousands of little kiddos, helping to detect maybe early delays or maybe some milestones that they're not reaching, so then they can then move on to resources that can help them in those early formative years. We also have all our little kiddos back for back to school. Mm-hmm. Our preschoolers are joining us. They just had Halloween, so that was a lot of fun.
Yes, I can vaguely remember a Halloween from elementary school. We always had Halloween parties. Wow. I still have those. I don't know.
Oh, yes. It's still a party. Big holiday. A lot of decorations. We do a kind of an open house with families, bring kids in. They do crafts and activities with the classroom. So it's really a fun day for not just the kids and the teachers, but for the families to really get involved and to get to know each other.
We, moms would always bake cupcakes to bring them in for a Halloween party, you know, or cookies or something like that. And one of my classmates' family owned a dairy. So we always got chocolate milk for everyone. We were the envy of the entire school because we got chocolate milk for everyone.
That would be a special treat.
That would be nice, yeah.
Yeah, for our Halloween party. What about Life Steps offers pre-K counts, do they not?
Yes. So
what is that anyway?
Yeah. So pre-K counts is a Commonwealth program that is designed to provide high quality early education for families that are within a certain income range. So the wonderful thing about that is the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania agrees with Life Steps and many other organizations out there that early education is truly fundamental to help establish a strong foundation for future success. That's why we do a lot of the services as we do for younger children. We believe that for every dollar invested in early education, it can give you $7 down the road in services and things like that. So pre-K counts is a program that allows children to start that preschool early. So we are lucky to be a provider of pre-K counts in Butler County, but also Armstrong and Beaver County.
And what exactly happens? I mean, what age group are we talking about here? Three, four-year-olds?
Yeah, so we're talking about that 4 to 5-year-old cohort, the kids that are getting ready for kindergarten. So the whole goal of pre-K counts and any of our preschool program is to make sure that those kids are ready for the first day of kindergarten.
My engineer tells me I have to make sure that you keep looking at the microphone
Sorry about that.
We lose you. So, well, things have changed. Back in my day, there were some schools that didn't even have kindergarten. I didn't go to kindergarten. I went to a small rural school district, and first grade is when you went to school. Kindergarten is pretty widespread now. In fact, more and more school districts are offering full-day kindergarten instead of half-day. But now we have something even before kindergarten.
Yes, but it's very similar in the sense that pre-K counts also has that half-day or full-day option. So for those kiddos that maybe they've grown up with after school with mom or with grandma and mom or a family member watching them, and now they're getting ready for school, that half day can really help them transition, especially if they're going to full day kindergarten. So it really allows for us to work with each family and each child to see what's right and fits well for them.
So surely they're not learning to read at that age. What is it help in becoming socialized? Is that part of the pre-K counts curriculum?
Yep, so it's helping them in a lot of different areas. So social skills is very important. It's also helping them in language skills, being able to recite ABCs, understanding words and things like that, colors, starting with numbers, mathematical thinking, problem solving. There's tons of different kind of developmental parameters that we look at. And what I love about it at that age, it looks like they're having fun and singing songs and playing games, but they're really working on different developmental milestones.
Mm-hmm. Well, learning to socialize quietly and orderly is a big thing, because if you don't have that by the time you get to kindergarten or first grade, it could be chaos for the first couple of months of school.
Yes, and that is a big part of it, is helping children integrate into a classroom setting. I think one of the unique things about Life Steps is that we are a classroom setting that has children with and without special needs learning and growing together.
Where are the pre-K counts classrooms located?
So they are located, the pre-K counts and preschool classrooms are located at our Butler County Program Center. That's right there on Newcastle Road, right by the Staples.
Mm-hmm. And is that the only location?
The only location here in Butler, the only other one is we do have a classroom at South Butler Elementary School. And then we have pre-K counts and preschool programming in Armstrong County and Beaver County.
Is preschool programming different from pre-K counts? Can you explain the difference?
The only difference is that pre-K counts is a Commonwealth-funded program. Preschools may have different funding sources. So one of those funding sources is preschool scholarships for children. And that's actually through what's called the EITC program, which is a tax credit program, who also, another amazing thing that NextTier does for the community, not just Life Steps, but many other organizations, is they contribute tax contributions that go towards scholarships for young children.
Do kids attend these preschool and pre-K counts every day of the week, or just a couple of days, or is that a choice of parents?
Yep, that's the great thing about flexibility. Depending, now the pre-K counts program has some kind of guidelines where you need to be there every day of the week. But with the preschool programs and even our daycare programs, there's some flexibility. So if a family only wants their child to be there 3 days a week versus four, or things like that.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to ask you about your philosophy of having kids with special needs in the same classroom with other kids. This is done with a purpose, obviously.
Yes, it is. We really believe in that inclusivity, and that children with and without special needs growing and learning together is beneficial to both children. So for children without special needs, they're learning empathy, and they're learning to understand the world around them, and that includes individuals with disabilities. And for children with disabilities, they're also learning and growing together and learning how to work with children without disabilities. So it's a really good way for them to learn together and to support each other and become peers and kind of encourage each other.
Mm-hmm. And the sooner, the earlier you learn that, the better.
Yes, you know? Yes. We have a lot of parents that share with us that that's one of the things they like about our programs, is that integrated environment.
I know I saw a picture within the past couple of years. It was one of the area high schools was doing their spring musical, which they all do these days. They had a cast picture, one of the cast members in a wheelchair. And I thought, boy, you wouldn't have seen that, you know, 15 or 20 years ago. Thank goodness we see it today.
Mm-hmm. Very true.
Just because a student is physically disabled or has some sort of physical disability, they can still be in the musical, for goodness sakes.
And that is really our agency philosophy behind all of our programming, whether it's programming with children or programming with adults and seniors. We believe that everyone is able to live their life to the fullest, and we want to be a part of making sure that that's possible.
Mm-hmm. We'll take a break. We'll chat more with Carol and Cassandra here on It's Your Turn on WISR Wednesday edition. We'll be back right after these words.
Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way. Getting there starts here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Shopping for a mortgage? Don't just compare the mortgage rates. At Armco Credit Union, they'll not only offer a competitive rate, but they may be able to save you money with lower fees and closing costs. Whether you're looking for a VA, FHA, or conventional loan, they're here to help guide you through the mortgage process so you can make the best decision for your situation. Call today, 724-284-2020. Don't have time to call or visit? Apply for a mortgage online at armcocu.com. Like them on Facebook and be the first to learn about their promotions or events. Armco Credit Union is an equal housing opportunity and is federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. We're chatting with Cassandra Kokoski, who is the Vice President of Development for LifeSteps. LifeSteps selected by the folks at NextEar Bank as the Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month. Also with us here in the studio, in addition to Cassandra, is Carol Leshensky, Senior Vice President at NextEar. You do this every month, right? You select an area nonprofit?
We do, Dave. And I think we've been doing this for over 4 years now. And it is just such a win-win program. It allows us to give back to the community in a unique way. You know, we're able to showcase that particular nonprofit and allow them to share their message, their needs. But it's also fun. Mm-hmm. You know, we have some fun aspects to it where we do sell chocolate covered pretzels in the branches. There are $1 and half of the proceeds go towards that nonprofit. So, and our customers look forward to knowing who the nonprofit of the month is. We also have Jeans Day. So, it, like I said, it's just a win-win program that we wish we could actually showcase more nonprofits. We wish there were more months in the year, actually.
I want to talk a little bit more about some of the programs through LifeSteps. By the way, yesterday you had a big pancake festival. I'm sure that you haven't been able to total things up yet, but just, you know, cursory look, did it appear to be successful? Did you have good turnout?
Yes, we did. Even despite the rain yesterday, that kind of kept the morning a little gloomy. We were steady all day long with community members coming out to celebrate the 60th anniversary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're being gentle when you say it was a little gloomy. It was lousy the first half of the day yesterday. It was cold and it was wet and it was windy.
People were enjoying the coffee as much as the pancakes at that point, too.
Well, it improved markedly during the afternoon and in the early evening hours. Well, I'm glad it went well.
Yeah, we're very lucky to have the partnership with the Butler Rotary and just businesses like NextEar that help support the event.
Mm-hmm. 60 years, huh?
Yeah.
Probably going to go for another 60, I imagine, huh?
That's our goal.
Did LifeSteps not recently reach affiliation agreements with a couple of other area nonprofits? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so LifeSteps is fortunate to have affiliations with two other area nonprofits, Accessibilities and All Abilities. So they are nonprofits that help support the community in their own unique ways. Accessibilities has two programs. One of them is called First Steps Early Intervention. So it's an early intervention programming designed to help those young children birth to three that maybe have been identified already with a developmental delay or maybe needing some physical therapy, occupation, OT, speech therapy, things like that. So a lot of those therapies are done in-home, helping children kind of get ready for joining preschool.
And this is kids age 1 to 3, and they can be helped already at that young age?
Yep, there's a lot that can be done that can help children with simple things like rolling over, beginning of speech and language. So there's a lot you can do early on in those formative years. We often talk about those first steps are so important, and that's why the program's name's First Steps, because for some children, they need a little bit of extra support, whether it be for their first steps or their first words.
So your screeners know at what age most kids should begin to do this, whether it's take first steps or Something as simple as being able to roll over, you know when that should be happening?
Yeah, for children in that program, they are often referred through their medical provider or a service coordinator to the services. Mm-hmm. So they've already kind of been identified. So it's a little bit, so if you can imagine, a child check would happen first, and that we might suggest, you know what, you might need to refer to another, a doctor's office to get resources. And then the doctor's office would then refer a resource properly to a family, might be able to choose from a list of organizations that they could work with, and then accessibility would be one of those organizations.
And another affiliation in addition to First Steps?
The other program that Accessibilities has is their Home and Community Service Program. So this is a community-based program with adults that are homebound, that are maybe not nursing home care, but maybe need a little bit of extra support through the day to live independently, to go to medical appointments, to help with daily living skills and things like that. So that's one of the other programs that Accessibilities does.
A lot of people might mistakenly believe that Life Steps only has programs for kids.
No, we have. That's why we often refer to ourselves that we provide help along life's journey. So we help children as young as few months old in our child care up to seniors. So we really span that whole journey of life.
A lot of people might not realize that the geographical footprint of Life Steps has grown noticeably over the past several years.
It has.
You're still headquartered here in Butler,
yes,
though,
so
right?
Our home, we were founded in Butler County, so we always have a warm place in our hearts for Butler County. But we have grown to 10 Western PA counties. So 10 counties.
Wow. That's a sizable portion of the western end of the state.
It is, and we provide 36 different programs and services in those 10 counties. Now, the counties will vary, so programs are really customized to that county and that need.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Are there offices in all those counties or just programs?
Some of those counties. So, for instance, Beaver County has a very similar type of center like we have here in Butler that has children's programming and adult programming in the same center.
Life Steps was once called Easter Seals.
I remember that.
It became independent probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago?
Yeah, 1994.
Like that. Before your time, probably, yeah. with the organization, but it was within memory of most folks.
Yeah, we were founded in 1923, and I love our founding story because it was essentially a group of adults in the Butler community who happened to be Rotarians, that at the time polio was a big epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
And there were nowhere for them to come in Butler County to get services and to get treatment. So it was essentially a ride share that was started by these Rotarians that said, well, let's figure out a way to transport them down to Pittsburgh to get treatment. And that's how Life Steps started.
Wow. Mm. Wow. Cassandra, you're too young to remember the polio epidemics. Carol, do you remember getting a polio shot or the sugar cubes whenever you were a little kid in school?
You know, I don't, Dave. I wish I could say I did, but I don't remember that.
You never got a polio vaccine?
I don't
vaccine?
Think so.
Really?
Yeah. Maybe I did, and I just don't remember. That's a probability.
Jonas Salk, who did most of his research at the University of Pittsburgh, was the first to develop a successful polio vaccine. It was in the mid-50s. I only know this because I interviewed a couple of gentlemen who were involved in the testing of Dr. Salk, and they actually had polio.
Oh, wow.
But it was a tremendous scourge up until the announcement from Dr. Salk, you know, that the vaccine works, you know. Mm-hmm. And then it was Dr. Sabin that developed an oral vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
That you took on a sugar cube. You don't remember this either?
You know, I was born in the 60s, so I would say that I definitely got the vaccine then. Don't remember.
It was still being given at that point.
Yeah, I'm sure I did then.
Not so much anymore, because thanks to the work of Rotarians around the world, polio has been pretty much eradicated. Mm-hmm, there's only a couple of countries where there's still an occasional outbreak.
Yeah, I know the Rotarians are still fighting that good fight to completely eradicate, but I think it is very few countries anymore.
And it's mainly political. One of the countries, I think, is Iran, where they don't want to be involved in the getting rid of it or, you know, be involved in the program. But otherwise, it's pretty much eliminated worldwide, which is tremendous. I mean, that just sent fear through the hearts of families every summer because that's when the polio outbreaks occurred. Mm-hmm. So that was the start of Life Steps. Well, yep. What we now know is Life Steps.
Yep.
Huh?
And it was almost 100 years ago.
And yeah. It was Rotarians way back then, huh?
Mm, yes, it was.
Goodness gracious, what a debt we owe to those men and women, huh?
Yes, so that's one of the things that we appreciate at Life Steps, that strong community involvement, whether it be through individuals or businesses, makes such a huge difference. And we couldn't do the work that we do without the community being a part of supporting and caring.
Are the adult programs that are available through Life Steps, are they also similar to the frequency that the kids' programs are? In other words, 1 or 2 days a week, or maybe 4 or 5 days a week, depending on the family's needs?
Yep. So we have several different adult programs for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Those are programs such as our adult training facilities that we have in Butler. So we have individuals that maybe only come 1 or 2 days a week, or individuals that come the full 5 days a week. This is a great program because it is a program that works on building skills. So whether that individual wants to build living skills, such as being able to do their own laundry, or maybe they want to build social skills, like being able to be out in the community without maybe having a behavior or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or they might be an individual that is looking for future employment. So they're trying to build those skills to be employed. So we have a lot of kind of different variances in our ID program that allows us to work with individuals that are in different places in their life of what they want to do.
Do individuals have to be referred to Life Steps, either by a PCP, a primary care physician, or someone else?
No, they do not. So for some of those individuals, some of our biggest kind of marketing and promotion is word of mouth. So folks that have enjoyed their experience with Life Steps and sharing it with their friends or family or someone they meet that might be in a similar circumstance, they can just call Life Steps office or check out our website and then connect with us, and we can kind of walk them through the process. And oftentimes, if we're not the right person, then we can connect them to other resources.
How soon can parents schedule a child check for their little ones?
Screenings going on every month. So if folks visit our Facebook page or if they go to our website lifesteps.net, they can see upcoming screenings in different counties.
Mm-hmm. And screenings can be done even for little ones under the age of 1 or 2?
Yes. So what I love about the child tech screenings are they obviously look at the age and they're looking at the milestones that they should, you know, doctors and medical professionals determine that they should be at that age. And then what they're doing is it's looking like they're playing with a child because they're really looking for some of those telltale signs of, are they rolling over? Are they following directions? Little things like that can help them determine if there are maybe some red flags or some questions that they should kind of be referred to for follow-up.
I did an interview on the increase in the diagnosis of kids on the autism spectrum. And so I learned a little bit about what they look for. Eye movement is one thing, mm-hmm. and smiling is another, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Doing certain things that ordinarily would make a toddler smile. And if they don't smile, then that's, a potential danger sign.
Yeah, we have really well-trained screeners and really well-trained staff across our network that really understand the individuals they're working with or kind of that community that they're outreaching to really be able to know what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. So this month, stop into a Next Year Bank branch and buy a chocolate-covered pretzel. You can help out Life Steps a little bit.
Huh? Absolutely. Stop in any branch, and you can buy as many as you want.
A quick word, Carol, about the Next Year Connects programs and what they can do for nonprofits.
Absolutely. David, it really is an all-encompassing program. It's comprehensive. And yeah, we do the fun things like the Spotlight Nonprofit of the Month. But we found years ago that many of our nonprofits were underserved as far as their banking needs. So we created a program that really tries to help them fulfill not only their banking needs, but multiple needs, such as offering assistance with donations, assistance maybe even with video production, if they're doing commercials, things of that nature. Obviously, we're not going to do that. We have partners that do that and provide that source for them. And we also have the basic banking services, but it's a great program that will really help any nonprofit. So if any nonprofit's interested in hearing about it, they can call our 1-800 number. It's 1-800-262-1088 and ask for me.
Hmm. Carol Achensky is a senior vice president at NexTier, visiting with us today, along with Cassandra Kokoski. Cassandra is the executive vice president of development for LifeSteps. Nice to have the two of you here today.
Always good to be here, Dave.
Good to talk with you.
Thank you so much.
Program note, no election returns tonight. No, that was yesterday. And no Penguin hockey tonight either, because the Penguins have a little bit of a break here after playing up in Beantown earlier this week. They do play tomorrow night, and they're on the road again in New York against the Isles, the Islanders. And we will have that game for you tomorrow night here on WISR, the Pens and the Islanders. And we'll be back tomorrow with the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn at 12:30. Hope you can join us then. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 12:30 to 1:30, right here on WISR 680.
My life is filled with gloom. So day after day I stay locked up in my room. I know to you it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain. Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Cause so badly I wanna go outside. But everyone knows that a man ain't supposed to cry. Listen, I gotta cry, cause crying eases the pain, oh yeah. People, this hurt I feel inside, words could never explain. I just wish it would rain. Oh, let it rain, 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 rain. Tear-stained face pressed against the window pane. My eyes search the skies desperately for rain. Cause rain drops behind my teardrop, and no one will ever know that I'm crying.